our Yellow Rose of Texas, Willie.
I don't really pay attention to this alarm clock up here, but I like for it to be up here, you know, just for show and tell. Charlie and Joe say I never look at it, but anyhow, I usually try. It's Sunday morning, and I'm still Willie, and I'm still an alcoholic. It has been a perfectly beautiful, beautiful weekend. I've told a couple of them that, you know, they thank us so much for being here, and we thank y'all for being here. Y'all don't have the slightest idea. See, you're sitting there and you're looking up at one lone ranger at a time here, and we get the extra delight of looking down at you and looking into those eyes. And it's such a joy, you have no idea, of just giving away what's been given to us so freely in the past. And we feel like that all we are, another little link in the chain, and y'all take your little length and go home and hook it on to someone else. And that's all that we do, is to just pass on those links. So we've enjoyed it too. We get to step 10. And take out of our little 12 and 12 what Bill found would help to expound a little bit, not to say anything different because it says the same thing, but just take it and give it a little more depth in these last three steps. So on page 88 we begin. The principle behind our step 10 that we certainly need to carry for the rest of our lives in all of our affairs, and that's perseverance. Keep on keeping on no matter what. Perseverance. Not only about our sobriety, but about our lives. Knowing that we can overcome obstacles. All we have to do is flicker flashback and think of all the obstacles we overcame in order to get a drink. And we know that we can face any obstacle that we have. We do our footwork, then we turn it over to our higher power, and it'll get done. If it's supposed to be done, it will be done. When we get to step 10, as Charlie and Joe pointed out, we have a tendency, the promises are there, and we've done the work, the actual work. And it's sort of hard to go on into step 10, 11, and 12, because we think, well, now we've really got all of our ducks in a row. But so many of you that have been here since we started this back in the 80s know that I had this beautiful, beautiful father. And God bless him. I lost him 3 years ago. But he lived till he was 97 years old and went out cussing the Astros because they wouldn't win a ball game. He was healthy and he was alert. Everything just gradually after 97 years just wore out. But he was a beautiful old man, and I loved him and adored my dad from my very beginning on. And he had so many, he never did give us things like I told you yesterday that I wanted that were deep and philosophical and all of this, because this wasn't the kind of gentleman he was. He was pure Texas, pure country. And he'd, when I realized that we had a tendency to stop at step 9 and think, well, okay, we'll leave this other to a little later because now we can really begin to live. A little old expression that he had, and in Texas we express ourselves sort of simple. We don't really get all that complicated. And we use little expressions to tell how we feel or to describe something. Like the first time I ever taught out of the state of Texas, the kids all went home and asked their parents, you know, where is over yonder? You know? And we use all of these comparative things when we talk. And I remembered my dad saying one time when somebody thought they had something really, really solved. He said, you know, just because the old cat climbs in the oven to have her kittens, that don't make them biscuits. Now, Socrates himself didn't have any better philosophy than that. Because we're not through when we get through with those action steps, and it doesn't make us complete. We need step 10 and 11 and 12, as Charlie Joe said this morning, to keep growing and keep growing. We're not finished yet. We're not done yet until we really get into our step 10 and 11 and 12 and put those vital principles, this one of perseverance, to make ourselves, when the drudgery of life gets real bad, just to keep on keeping on and know that it's going to be all right. To go ahead and make decisions. I've made a lot of decisions in these years that I've been sober. And a lot of them have been wrong. But see, nothing happened. I didn't, you know, lose an arm or a leg or any other appendage. And nothing vital happened. I just made some wrong decisions. But I learned that that was okay, to go ahead and make them. If they're wrong, I'll know that it was the best decision that I could make at that particular time. Because old hindsight, we can sure make good decisions, can't we? Many an umpire realizes that. But let's look at this step 10. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Now, y'all been here with me all weekend. Which do you think would be my ring around word? Right. Love you. Promptly. Because this was my stumbling block in the beginning. I read that step. I take my personal inventory every day, it says here, and continued to take this inventory. And when I was wrong, promptly admitted it. And shoot, that's admitting I'm wrong wasn't any big deal. I had been saying, I'm sorry, honey, this won't happen. I'm sorry. And God bless her. When Rose and I were talking about this step, I said, Rose, it's really not difficult for me to tell people that I'm sorry. And she said, Willie, go back and read the step, honey, one more time. When we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And see, for me to look you in the eye and say, I was wrong about that, is a lot harder than I'm sorry. I'm sorry are easy words for any human being to get out. But to look somebody else in the eye and say, I was wrong, ooh, that takes a little bit more, doesn't it? Because that's a hard word to come out. You remember, those of you old enough to remember the Fonz. You remember the Fonz, how hard a time the Fonz had getting a rock, 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 rock. He couldn't get out the word wrong. It just wasn't the Fonz image. And I think a lot of us have that. It's easy to say, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I hurt your feelings. I'm sorry I did that. I'm sorry I'm late. But to, like we were talking yesterday, to really say, you know, I was wrong. I didn't calculate my time right. I was wrong. And I'll try not to let it happen again. So I had to really read the step as it is written, not as I would like to rewrite it. And then to pay very much attention to that promptly. And that has proven throughout the years to be a real ring around word. Because if I fool around with the wrong, just like if I fool around with an excuse, you give me 15 minutes and I wasn't wrong to start with. I wasn't wrong. In fact, you were the one that was wrong. That's the human mind working. That is. If I don't promptly do it, as promptly as I possibly can, I'm not going to be wrong anymore. So let's look and see what it says, you know. As we work the first 9 steps, we prepare ourselves for the adventure. There's my word again. I look at it and find it every place I can. Because I like for my life to be just one adventure right after the other. Boring, I don't care for. We prepare ourselves for the adventure of a new life. But when we approach step 10, we commence to put our AA way of life to practical use, day by day, in fair weather or foul. And that's what we're going to need, isn't it? To put this way of life into our lives and use it no matter what. In good weather, when we really want to celebrate, like at the wedding last night, I was waiting for somebody to pass the champagne. You know, weddings are happy, happy, happy occasions, and they're always fun. And you want, you know, to go on with the celebrating. You think, well, this is a beautiful occasion. And we can get so hyped up on a beautiful occasion sometime that we can do just as much damage as we can in that foul weather. And that foul weather is going to come for all of us. If you live long enough, then you're going to have some foul. So this step 10, the using of it, the practicing of it, the continuing to take that personal inventory, keeps our insurance paid up. It keeps our armor in place so that if that fair or foul weather comes, we can take it. Then comes the acid test. Can we stay sober, keep an emotional balance? There's our balance. That's what we're all trying for. And live to good purpose under all conditions. A continuous look at our assets and liabilities and a real desire to learn and grow by these means are necessary for us. We alcoholics have learned this the hard way. More experienced people, of course, in all times and places have practiced unsparing self-survey and criticism. For the wise have always known that no one can make much of his life until self-searching becomes a regular habit. And that's if you'll just give it a try. And I tell my girls, let's just try it for a month. Run it up the flagpole. See if we salute it. Just try it. Because you do something for a month and you can form a habit. And then it'll be just as much of a habit for you. You won't even have to stop and think, I need to take a continued inventory. It'll just be a part of your life. Until he is able to admit and accept what he finds, and until he patiently and persistently tries to correct what's wrong. Until this becomes a regular habit, it says, that this wholeness that we're looking for won't be there. At the bottom of the page there, it says, you know, I've often gone into meetings, I won't backtrack a little bit, which I have been known to do. I've gone into some meetings sometime, and for one solid hour, one person will ask at the beginning of the meeting, a new person will say, y'all keep talking about a dry drunk, what is it? And for one solid hour, I will sit and listen to everybody describe a dry drunk. And the poor little newcomer sitting there going this way, you know, what? Because everybody has a little bit different version of a dry drunk. When my girls ask me what a dry drunk is, I tell them, let's turn to page 88 of the 12 and 12. A dry drunk is described right down to the last notch. Let's see what it says. When a drunk has a terrific hangover because he drank heavily yesterday, he cannot live well today. But there's another kind of a hangover which we all experience whether we are drinking or not. And that's the emotional hangover. The emotional hangover. It's the direct result of yesterday and sometimes today's excesses of negative emotions. And look what they are. Anger, fear, jealousy, and the like. Excesses in those areas. A teeny little bit of them is not going to throw us off balance. But in excesses of these emotions, we're going to be in big trouble. We're heading for a dry drunk. It says if we would live serenely today and tomorrow, we certainly need to eliminate these hangovers. That doesn't mean that we'll ever be able to cut these tearing emotions out of our lives. But as I said the other day, let's just don't let them unpack their suitcase and live with us. We need to eliminate these dry drunks, these hangovers. Now, this doesn't mean that we need to wander morbidly around in the past. It requires an admission and correction of errors now. Ring around.
Ring around.
Our inventory enables us to settle with the past. Step four does that for us. When this is done, we're really able to leave it behind us. We drop the rock, don't we? When our inventory is carefully taken and we have made peace with ourselves, the conviction follows that tomorrow's challenges can be met as they come. When my girls come in and they've had, and particularly a lot of the younger ones, they have had particular upsetting, terrible childhood. And I want to get them out of that as quickly as I possibly can, because they're maybe in their early... When I say girls, I'm talking anybody below 50. You know what? But, you know, they seem to... They can't... They want to, but they can't put that past behind them. And that's the only way they're ever going to go forward, is to settle with it. It's there. It's over with. It's done with. And I won't let it control me anymore. If I put enough good, positive thinking into my life, that negative will get less and less and less. It won't go away because our brains are not... It doesn't let go of things. The ugly, unfortunate things that have happened to a lot of people... Men that have had to spend time in penitentiaries, and it's hard for them to let go of that and to put it where it belongs. If we can replace bad experiences with a good attitude, and I found the best way I can do that is be so filled with gratitude every day of my life, then I can replace any memory. I can push it so far back into that subconscious that it doesn't bother me anymore. The only time I'll call it up is to work with another sick woman. Then I'll call that experience back and I'll share it with her. And then I'm going to put it right back where it belongs. But if we fill our life with the positive, and I don't know any better way to do it than gratitude. And it's easy. It was easy for me to be grateful for the big, big things in life. Grateful for a beautiful day like this and a beautiful weekend that we've had. Sunsets and sunrises and rainbows and all of these things that we tell people, you know, that people tell us to pay attention to. And I pay attention to all those things. But it's the little day by day gratitude for the small things. My life is really made up of trivia. Little things. most of our lives are. Nothing momentous happens to us every day of our lives. Little trivial things. And if we can just be... I was taught by my beautiful sponsor, will you be grateful for everything, honey? And if you put that into a practice, if you'll just give it a try for a couple of weeks, you'll find that gets to be a habit too, of just being grateful for, you know, I'm grateful that I woke up this morning. A lot of folks didn't. A lot of folks didn't. I'm glad I woke up and everything was still there. A lot of folks had terrible wrecks out there on that freeway, all freeways. And they didn't get up all in one piece this morning. So I could start with the deep gratitude. Then I have a momentum going and I can appreciate all the little things. A woman one time came into the meeting and she was fussing and carrying on. She was getting up in years and she was fussing with her little companion, and the other little lady had on a perky little hat and she was just as happy and came jogging in as she could. And here the other one was dragging, and she said, I don't know, all this gratitude business, they're going to be talking about it tonight, and here I am, struggling, blah, blah, blah. And she went on, and the other little perky lady with her little hat sitting sideways said, well, honey, one thing that you can be grateful for is that wrinkles don't hurt. So every morning when I wake up, after I get through with my deep gratitude, I tell myself, Willie, aren't you grateful that wrinkles don't hurt? Life can either be a positive or a negative, and this step 10 helps us to make it into a positive. Not as a New Year's resolution, but as a daily practice. A lot of times with my new girls, when they come in, and they want to, you know, they're not ready. Their brains, and particularly those that are really right off of the boat, in other words, they are still not capable of giving you their full names, just, you know. And I was in that position where my thinking wasn't too good, and a lot of times I take this page 89 in the 12 and 12 when they want to know what this program's all about and what are these steps people keep talking about. I take these next pages and talk about the inventories that we take and the description here of the different kinds of ways that we learn to live and check up on ourselves. It just gives them a little capsule of what they're going to be trying to do. At the bottom of the page, in the middle of that last paragraph, it says, the emphasis on inventory is heavy only because a great many of us have never really acquired the habit of accurate self-appraisal. Once this healthy practice has become grooved, it will be so interesting and profitable that the time it takes won't be missed. For these minutes and sometime hours spent in self-examination are bound to make all the other hours of our day better and happier. And at length, our inventories become a regular part of our everyday living. Down that next, just skip down to this next paragraph. We have, of course, I'm covering three steps this morning, so I'm hurrying as fast as us Texans can talk. I wish I had the talent of my New Yorker friends that are here and can. I really do, so I could go faster. You know, I'm picking at one in particular, and he's not here. Pass the word on to him, will you? It's a spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with us. Ooh, that irritated me the first time I read it. I said, now, wait a minute, Rose. You mean every time I get disturbed, there's something wrong with me? People disturb me. And people, you know, going down the freeway and somebody really wants my front fender. They really want it. And they'll cut just as close in front of me for no reason. They just wanted where, you know, ahead of me. No reason, just wah. And do you mean that all I'm doing, Rose, is driving down the road? But she said, hon, look what it says. It says disturbed. You can either get disturbed about it, or you can stay undisturbed. Because getting disturbed about it's not going to... The man's already halfway down the road. No use calling him anything. He can't hear you. It's like one time somebody asked, Chuck C. used to, you know, run all over California and speak at meetings, even as he got older and older. Anybody asked Chuck to come, he'd go. And a fellow was traveling with him one time, and Jack said he asked him, you know, Chuck, why in the world do you just keep getting out here on the road and messing with all of these people, all of these drivers? He said, I'm only driving the one car. But the other man was disturbed with every other driver on the road, you know. And Chuck so quietly, I'm only driving the one car. So if I'm disturbed, I need to quickly analyze, you know, okay, is it worth getting disturbed about in the first place? There is something wrong with me if I let little old piddling things disturb me. It means that my life has got to be a little old piddling thing, and I don't want it to be little and piddling. I want it at least to be important to me. But if I put it down in the little bracket, then that's going to carry over into other phases of my personality. If somebody hurts us and we're sore, we are in the wrong also. Now this takes some thinking. If you hurt my feelings and I keep my feelings hurt and I walk around with those hurt feelings hanging over me, what earthly good am I? None. If I let it happen. So you hurt my feelings. Big deal. So maybe I needed to be taken down a peg or two. And let it go. Let it go, Willie. And just maybe don't carry your feelings quite so far out. Don't stick your elbow on out so far where somebody can hurt it. I'm not always in the wrong about it, but if I stay sore about it, I am. But it says it goes on like the alcoholic mind. But are there no exceptions to this rule? What about justifiable anger? If somebody cheats us, aren't we entitled to be mad? Can't we be properly angry with self-righteous folk? For us of AA, these are dangerous exceptions. We have found that justified anger ought to be left to those better qualified to handle it. And of course, I didn't like that at first either. Better qualified? I can get as qualified as they are to handle it. Dadgummit. Of course, the more I thought about it, the madder I got. But then I thought about this man that I was married to all these years. He could blow up like a keg of dynamite. I mean, anger. Whop. And 5 minutes later, if you tried to talk to him about it, he didn't know what you was talking about. He was through with it. He'd blow sky high, get everything said, air would turn blue, then it was over. See, he was better qualified to handle anger than I was. Because when I blow up, all pieces of me stick every place, and on everybody. So I'm not. He was better qualified to handle his anger than I was. I had to learn to handle it. Of course I get angry. I couldn't walk around for all these years and tell you, I'd tell you a lie. I'd tell you a lie if I told you I wouldn't be angry for the rest of the day. But see, I've learned to handle it in a different way than comes natural for me. And it gets to be a habit. I can get angry at man's inhumanity to man. You read the front page of the paper when you turn on the news to see what one human being can do to other human beings for no reason. There isn't I don't think anybody walking that anger and rage to think another human being can do this. It comes. But then I can say, dear God, help him. I can say, God, let's, I'll do my little bit. Let's see if we can't help turn this situation around. That's so much better than staying angry at that particular thing and then spreading it into being angry at the world in general. That everybody is no good. So there are people better qualified to handle it. And we get better at it the more we practice it. Few people have been more victimized by resentments than have we alcoholics. It mattered little whether our resentments were justified or not. A burst of temper could spoil a day, and a well-nursed grudge could make us miserably ineffective. Don't want to be that. I want to be at least effective in my little orbit. Nor were we ever skillful in separating justified from unjustified anger. As we saw it, our wrath was always justified. Anger, that occasional luxury of more balance to people. But see, that doesn't even hurt my feelings anymore because I have become a little more balanced. I don't stay balanced, but I've become a little bit. I would usually tip the scales almost perpendicularly. But now at least I can pull back and balance up again when I feel myself getting either way or the other. So the more we practice it, the better we get up there with those well-balanced folks. But angry, that occasional luxury of more balanced people, could keep us on an emotional jag indefinitely. These emotional dry benders often led straight to the bottle. And other kinds of disturbances. And all these are ring arounds because these are the ones I have to guard against. Jealousy, envy, self-pity, hurt pride did the same thing. And the list can go on and on. Some of us are more overbalanced in some excesses than others. You have to figure out, Rose said, honey, you know you better than anybody. Find out what your top list is of things that disturb you and keep a check on them. Now, the rest of this step concerns how important and the different ways there is for you, as the big book describes, to take these inventories. It's very helpful when you're working with another person. We're going to have to scoot on over to step 11. On page 96, our principle there is awareness. Awareness. To be aware of my feelings very quickly. To not sit on them and rationalize them. To be aware of other people's misery will keep me out of self-pity for a long time. If I'm aware of your hurt, and try to do any tiny little thing that I can, I get more unaware of my own hurt. Awareness. Awareness of all the, instead of thinking about some people's inhumanity, why don't I think about all the good people I know, the people that are doing a whole bunch of good stuff in this world? Lord, we got a passel of them. Y'all have sat here and gotten weary in various sections of your anatomy since Thursday. You're doing something. You're not only trying to, you're not only trying to better your own lives, not any of you. You want to better the lives of the people that you love. You're aware of the fact that you do have influence over other people. Maybe just one or two. Maybe a whole bunch. Being aware of what's going on around you and not just oblivious, so oblivious to everything that you can only think of yourself. I was so into me that I couldn't see you. And through the years, that's changed, thank God. So awareness is our principle that we add with this step. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Sam Shoemaker gave us, told Bill one time, gave us another little quote too that we can latch on to, and he said, "You can't stay sober, Bill, on yesterday's spiritual experience. They have to be a constant renewal, or you'll lose the first one." He wanted Bill to stay aware of the fact that even though he had had a deep spiritual experience, that that experience has to be renewed and renewed and renewed. And it can be renewed through meditation and prayer. And meditation to me, as I've learned, is just, for me, is just sitting quietly and listening. We forget sometime that, you know, we talk to God and we talk to God and we talk to God, and God bless Him. Sometime I think He wants to say, you know, "Shut up, Willie, and listen. I can't talk when you're talking." I think sometime I can see Him on Sunday morning just running as hard as He can to jump in a closet because there's so many people asking Him for things, you know. "God, give me this. God, give me that. God." And I think He just might want to run and hide. And I know He does from me sometime because I'm just asking Him for everything. But if I stop and listen, if meditation has become, it's a listening experience for me to just sit quietly and just sort of listen. Listen and seeing what's going on in Willie's head. Just listening for it. And eliminate what's going on that I don't like. If I'm brooding or nursing a grudge or anything, if I'll sit quietly, I'll hear what's going on up here. And know what I have to tend to. Praying only for His will in my life and the power to carry that out. Prayer and meditation are our principal means of conscious contact with God. We AAs are active folks. We're going to leave here. We've been confined in this little room almost all weekend, see. But we go back now out into the jungle. And a lot of us are busy, busy, busy folks. I'm into everything. And if it, you know, if it's, the harder it looks like it's to do, the more I'm going to jump into it. Texas, you know, is sort of, it's a funny state in a lot of ways, but we have the funniest politics, and I'm right in the big middle of it. I'm very active in the political structure of Texas and have been for years, and I love it. Doesn't make sense, but it's a lot of fun. I like to work at election time, and I like to go to Austin and lobby for bills that I feel strongly about and lobby against those that I feel strongly about. In other words, what I'm saying is what the book is saying. We're active people. We're into other things. We don't just stay closed up. If you knew, honey, and you think, "Dear God, do I just have to go to these meetings the rest of my life?" Hon, meetings will be a part of your life. But they also tell us in our program that we we'll, after we get our feet on the ground a little bit and get our program going, that we get back into the mainstream of life. We have to survive. You're not going to stay closed up in a little protected area like we have been this weekend. You'll be out there battling the battle. You'll have the tools, though. And you can have all the adventure that you want, whatever turns you on. But you're not going to have a dull life. I promise you that. Enjoying the satisfactions of dealing with the realities of life, usually for the first time in our lives, and strenuously trying to help the next alcoholic who comes along. So it isn't surprising that we often tend to slight serious meditation and prayer as something not really necessary. To be sure, we feel it's something that might help us to meet an occasional emergency, and we know about that kind of praying. But at first, many of us are apt to regard it as a somewhat mysterious skill of clergymen from which we may hope to get a second-hand benefit. Or perhaps we don't believe in these things at all. But when we go on and take so many of the beautiful suggestions that are made in here and in our big book, then we realize that meditation is merely a clearing of the mind that will help anybody. Anywhere. You send your kids off to school in the morning right after a big battle royal, and that kid is going to be just like a bucket full of worms for the first hour of class. They're going to be nervous and upset. We can't always send our kids off nice and quiet and peaceful, but it's good when we keep trying to, even if we have a big explosion about what they're going to wear. What they're going to eat, what they're not going to eat, anything like that, we can still try to simmer them down before we throw them out the door, before we ease them out for their day, because we know how we can get boiled up and stay boiled up. Meditation, quiet thinking, and our prayer, it gives us the so many good suggestions in here. At the bottom of page 97, it said, those of us who have come to make regular use of prayer would no more do without it than we would refuse air and food and sunshine. And for the same reason, when we refuse air and light and food, the body suffers. When we turn away from meditation and prayer, we likewise deprive our minds, our emotions, and our intuitions of vitally needed support. As the body can fail its purpose for lack of nourishment, so can the soul. And it's been said many times in many ways in our chapter on this in the big book. Our prayer needn't be a prescription that somebody else gives us. If we need to make a beginning, then, and my girls will ask me, I don't know how to pray. I've never been in a formal type religion. I don't know how to pray. That's when we go to page 99 of this step. And I'll say, well, we might start like this. First, let's look at a really good prayer. We won't have far to seek. The great men and women of all religions have left us a wonderful supply. Here, let us consider one that's a classic. The author was a man who for several hundred years now has been rated as a saint. We won't be biased or scared off by that fact, because although he was not an alcoholic, he did, like us, go through the emotional wringer. And as he came out on the other side of that painful experience, this prayer was his expression of what he could then see and feel and wish to become. And people that I've heard say, you know, we must never pray for our own personal needs. Let's look at this beautiful prayer of St. Francis. Just a tiny bit of it. He asked God for things for himself. Let's see what he says. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace. So he's asking God, do with me something good enough so that I can pass it on. That where there's hatred, I may bring love. As an individual human being, if I see hate, if I see prejudice, if I see anything that I know God doesn't like, then allow me to do my little tiny bit to bring some peace. Where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness. That where there's discord, I may bring harmony. So see, all through the whole prayer of St. Francis, I wish we could go through all of it, but all through that beautiful prayer, he's saying, God, you know, just make me be able to make a small dent in what you want me to do. It's just a plain old ordinary run-of-the-mill human being. And we can do those things. Lord, and the best place to start is at home. It's like the country western song, you know. Back it on up and take it on home. And that's the place that I had to start. Oh, I hate to skip stuff that I like. I know one of the little prayers that I start with, I started with, and I still keep up, that was the simplest for me to do in the beginning. Rose suggested that, Willie, if you're having trouble with doing formal type praying, just ask God every morning. Just say, God, help me keep my thinking straight today. And if I ask him, then I had my basic faith in God and always have. If I ask him, he's going to do it. And if he keeps my thinking straight, I can't get into any too big a trouble, can I? Not in my drinking, not in my life, not in my relationships. Just keep my thinking straight. It's such a simple prayer. And if I can say that every morning when I get up, if I think I'm, you know, that a formal prayer is not for me, this is what I've started. As the years have gone by, my prayers have, and my meditation has gotten to be of deeper meaning to me. But in the beginning, that's all I could do. And in the beginning, that's all a lot of the girls that I work with can do. God, just help me keep my thinking straight today. And it pushed me towards the simplicity of God, not the complicated God that I wasn't taught to fear God in the church I was reared in. But it was all a complicated bunch of stuff that I really couldn't get through to. But for God to just help me keep my thinking straight, and that the rest of my life would fall into pretty good place. Then on all the little mundane things that happened to me through that day, then if I thought straight about it, I wouldn't get in too big a swivet. I hate to skip anything, but y'all can. I know y'all can read, doggone it. And I know that you've read it before many times. There's many of you out there. God bless Gene back there. I bet he knows this thing four times better than I do. And I know you can read it, but I just hate to not share it with you. Because as I'm sharing with you, you're sharing with me with your eyes. But the thing of it is, one more thing before we leave that step 10, is that a beautiful Canadian man once gave me something that I have seen over and over in Alcoholics Anonymous. But for those of you who are new and might not have seen it yet, he handed me this little prayer and he said, Willie, if you're having trouble with your behavior, if you're having trouble with your thinking or your actions, this is a real good little prayer to put into your life. He said, it's been good for me for many a year, and he had been sober around 20 years at that time. And he said, Every night when you go to bed, you just say this little simple prayer. God, let everybody tomorrow treat me as I treated them today. I did the same thing. Let everybody tomorrow treat me as I treated them today. And he said, I tell you what, that'll keep you in line better than anything I know of. And you know, because he said it keeps me in line. He had used it. And this man walked like he talked. And I admired him. And I started putting that into my nightly prayer. And you know, it didn't take long to start treating folks a lot nicer. Because, say, I believe that God's going to do what I ask him to do. And if I ask him to do that, he going to do it. And I'm going to be in big trouble if I'm ugly to you today. Because I made a vow, because that's the way he told me to do it, to say that prayer every night before I go to sleep. Not very deep, but it's just threatening enough to keep old Willie in line. Our beautiful Wesley up here gave me another little, passed on to me something. I was really worried about something. It was my dad, and I was worrying, and Wesley asked me, said, Willie, have you prayed about it? And I said, of course I have, Wesley. And he said, well, honey, if you're going to pray, don't worry. And if you're going to worry, don't pray. And that has helped me with my prayer and meditation. To not say things in rote and not mean them sincerely. Our beautiful step 12. Our principle here is service. Not service work way up in New York. We're not talking about that. We're talking about service to everybody in our orbit. To everybody that we can possibly be of any service. It doesn't mean subservience. I'm not talking about servitude. I'm talking about looking for every little advantage that I possibly can to be of some good to another human being. This first paragraph sums up this 12th step so beautifully. First of all, the 12th step does say to us, having had a spiritual awakening as the results of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics. And I'm going to turn around and say, what message? This message. To other what? To other alcoholics. Other people can get all the fallout of my beautiful program. But I'm going to hone in on my alcoholics. And to practice these principles in all, ring around word, all ALL, our affairs. Let's look at that very first paragraph. I love the words, the joy of living is the theme of AA's 12th step, and action is its key word. Here we turn outward towards our fellow alcoholics who are still in distress. Here we experience the kind of giving that asks no rewards. Here we begin to practice all the 12 steps of the program in our daily lives, so that we and those about us may find emotional sobriety. When the 12th step is seen in its full implication, it's really talking about the kind of love that has no price tag on it. No price tag. I give my girls a suggestion. If they don't do it, I must not. come down on them like gangbusters. Because my love for them must not have any price tag. If they go out and do the exact opposite than what I have suggested to them, I don't fire them. I mean, this is just me. I don't, you know, say, well, Benji, you didn't do what I said. I'm not going to sponsor you anymore. That'd be like, you know, in school telling a kid, well, Benji, you didn't behave today. Well, you know, I'm not going to like you anymore, and I'm not going to teach you another thing. You can sit here 9 months. I'm not going to teach you anything. No, a lot of my girls do just exactly the opposite. But I have to remind myself of that sentence right there. It's really talking about the kind of love that has no price tag on it. That goes for my man. That goes for my friends. That goes for everybody that my life and their lives touch. When I got to this step, I realized that I was adding, as I started putting it into my life, I was adding my third A to my beautiful program. First, I had admitted I was alcoholic. That was my first A. Then my second A was that I had accepted the fact that I was an alcoholic. But when I put my third A to work and began to approve of my alcoholism, approve of it. It's okay. I thought it was the worst thing. I told Rose, I said, why didn't this happen to a Baptist preacher's wife? She's not supposed to drink anyhow. Even after I had admitted it and so-called accepted it, all right, I'm one, all right, okay already, you know. But the practicing the principles in my life gave me that third A. It gave me the approval. Dear God, how could I possibly object? You know, we have the only terminal illness that is immediately arrestable. The only one. We have the only fatal illness that we come out of braver and stronger and happier than when we went into it. And that's not something to approve of. That's when I got my key. We have the only one. That third A has added quality to me as an individual. And I'm glad that the quality has come along with the quantity. Because I've seen so many people stay sober year after year and pile up those years and collect those medallions. And they don't feel, I don't judge them and say they don't have any quality. No, they don't feel that they have quality. And I always wonder, have you put in your third A? Have you really approved? You didn't do this deliberately. I didn't set out to be an alcoholic. You didn't either. I didn't set out to be allergic to alcohol and for it to cause this terrible obsession to drink and to destroy myself. I didn't set out like that. Something bigger than I am is responsible for that. And it wasn't done for any great deeds that I could do, because I do most of my working on a one-to-one basis with another woman alcoholic and with a lot of the younger men that are coming in, because I'm sort of a mother figure now. Thank God for them. And that's good. But, you know, we need to pay a lot of attention to this one-to-one, working with another alcoholic. For one alcoholic, the impact that one alcoholic can have on the life of another alcoholic is unbelievable. Because, see, we came in here one by one. None of us came in here in a bunch, did we? We came in here one at a time. And the impact that we, as one human being, trying to do better with our lives and trying to keep alcohol away from our lives and approving of the fact that we are, we can pass that approval on with our, not so much with our mouth, but with our actions of working with one alcoholic, eyeball to eyeball. I don't know what Alcoholics Anonymous is. We've talked about it here. We can talk about it for the rest of our lives. But those who know me know that this is the one thing I always end with. It appeared in the grapevine in a 1957 or 58. It appeared in a grapevine. And I latched on to it when Rose handed it to me. When I was so deep and I wanted to know, you know, all about who ran this thing and you know, everything about it. Explain. And so many people, gosh, we got a bunch of people studying us. Don't we have a bunch of folks studying us? Being an alcoholic nowadays is almost like, you know, it's almost a status symbol. Down there in Houston, we're having to, you know, sort of keep out the social climbers. People get in any kind of trouble. Well, it was because I was drunk at the time. I'm an alcoholic. So everybody, you know, God bless him, he's an alcoholic. So it's sort of getting to be a status symbol and an excuse. So we got lots of people then that are studying us. The only trouble, we never see them at our meetings, but they love to read about us. Read stuff that other folks that really don't, they've never been to a meeting either and don't know any of us, but they've written a bunch of stuff about us. I don't mind them studying us, but I wish they'd, you know, come in and be with us once in a while if they really want to know about us. Because there's no way to describe us. Because, you know, they'll say an alcoholic is after they've read and studied about it. An alcoholic, do you ever see anything that an alcoholic is? The only thing that's consistent about an alcoholic is his inconsistency. But they try to capsule us. And I mustn't do that when I'm working. I mustn't, you know, take part of that from them and do when I'm working with my girls. But there is no way to describe what I'm getting to is, there's no way to describe what we've had in this room since Thursday. All in just this one room. Any better than this little Canadian wrote it. AA is a spirit. It cannot be touched, nor can it be completely understood. It's as wide as the world and yet small enough to fit snugly into the hearts and the minds of man. It's brought light where only darkness dwelt. It's given hope to the hopeless and help to those who yearned in despair. It's nourished forgiveness in those who knew no pity. It's given strength to the weak and humility to the strong. It spurred to higher goals those who strove for nothing. It's taught patience to the hurried and action to the lazy. To youth, it's given vision. And to the aged, promise. To the lonely, companions, and to the restless, rest. To the sick, it's been a doctor, and to the dying, it has revived the desire to live. It has no judgment against the unteachable, nor has it praise for those who learn. To the outcast, it's been a family, and to the childless, it has given children. To the ignorant, wisdom, and to the wise, tolerance. It is given to all men that which is most precious. It's given a love of truth and a love of life with enough left over to share with each other. Thank you for letting me share with you this weekend. God bless.
Amazing. Amazing.